Morning Show, continuing along, just like the 151st Open Championship trucks along at Royal Liverpool. Brian Harman continuing to run away with it. 4 under on the day, 8 under for the tournament. Other leaders or guys high on the leaderboard out there now. Emiliano Grillo is 4 under, 1 over on the day, 5 under for the first round of the tourney. And Minwoo Lee having a hot morning himself. He is 3 under on the day. That's got him to 3 under for the tournament. He's got a couple holes left to play. Very, very happy to welcome in our first guest of the day. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Rex Hoggard, right over an analyst for Golf Channel. Rex, thanks so much for jumping on. How are you doing today?
Of course, it's a day in England. I'll just leave it at that. It's not a summer day. It's just a day.
Okay, let's get the weather report. It looks a little blustery from my screens,
but I've been
watching on mute because I've been talking words all morning long. What's it like over there weather-wise?
It's much different than yesterday. I think yesterday was a perfect English summer day. It's what we expected. I mean, I think if you look at the forecast, it's going to get progressively worse as we get further into the weekend. As far as the wind, I think there is going to be a little bit more rain as we get closer into the weekend. And I think that's what they expected. When you look at the golf course and the way they set it up, I think it's going to be a really good test. But I think yesterday was the day to score, and then the next 3 days, we'll just kind of have to hang on.
Yeah, and that's pretty kind of classic Open Championship, right? It doesn't always come on the first day of the tournament, but you usually get 1 or 2 days where you can make a bit of a move. Obviously, a few guys taking advantage of that, namely Brian Harman today. But I think the sexy name at the top of the leaderboard for most people is Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, he's had a bunch of close calls. He was in the playoff with Nick Taylor just a few weeks ago, or I guess about a month ago now, at the RBC Canadian Open. Obviously, still searching for his first PGA Tour win, and obviously this would be a little more than that. What did you see from Fleetwood yesterday to get off to the hot start?
It's so much fun to watch Tommy play in this, and I've done it for a couple of years now, and go back to 14 when it was here at Royal Liverpool. And I remember talking to him then. That was his first Open Championship, and he grew up 20 minutes from here, 20 minutes north from here, essentially kind of up more towards Birkdale. And the emotions and the support he gets, it's really cool to watch. And it's kind of hard to quantify exactly what this would mean to him. I mean, guys have their favorite tournaments. I mean, if you grew up in the South, you probably want to win the Masters. If you grew up anywhere else in the world, you want to win this. But for Tommy, it's particularly close. And watching him play yesterday, I think it was huge. Because if you look at what he's done this season, he hasn't particularly gotten off to good starts. So not only to get off to a good start, but to do it in this tournament with all of those emotions and all of those nerves and all that anxiety, I think it's a really good sign.
So have you got a sense from the players and people, other media members that you're talking to about the course through the first, you know, couple days of the tournament here? I know we're early on the second day, but I got to tell you, watching the 18th hole on TV here, and I'm sitting in Canada, it's different, I guess, when you're there, but that out of bounds thing to me is very, very weird and kind of hokey, to be honest. Ricky yesterday, I thought, got just absolutely roasted by it. Like, the two shots that he hit weren't that bad. They're sitting there. You can see them, and you can't play them. Like, I'm sure the players aren't loving that aspect of it.
It's different. It's weird. Normally, players tend to complain about anything if you give them something to complain about. But I will say, in this particular case, and this isn't the only Open Championship road, of course, that has internal out of bounds, it certainly comes into play. I mean, I know 18 is probably going to get everyone's attention. I would say the third hole, which is actually the first hole that they've kind of rerouted it for the championship, is even more jarring, because all you really see from the tee is that out of bounds on the right-hand side. I mean, there's nowhere else to go but left. And you can kind of make the same argument on 18. Now, they sort of switched the tee. They put it 50 yards back and kind of to the right to bring the out of bounds in play. But I get what you're saying, but I think probably Brooks Koepka said it best earlier this week. The idea being that you know what you have to do and what you don't have to do. And sometimes taking a 60-footer for a two-putt par is the absolute best you can do. And in a lot of cases, Ricky being the primary example yesterday, Adam Scott hit it out of bounds. I mean, that whole 18 took a toll. But you know what you have to do. You just need to execute the shots. Probably the bigger deal today is they kind of made some adjustments to how they set the golf course up and the bunkers specifically. Because yesterday, I think that's probably the bigger deal than the internal out of bounds. The bunkers were just brutal yesterday.
Yeah, there was the one clip of, I think it was Finau, basically like popping a putter out from the wall of a bunker so then he could chip out still backwards. It was, I could see why the players were getting frustrated there. But, I mean, to your point, it's the same course for everybody, and if they're going to make some adjustments, I have no problem with it. But that's kind of the beauty of the game. And then, you know, the other thing about 18 and the OB is I kind of tend to side a little more with what Koepka said there, the idea that how many weeks do we complain about guys getting a free drop from a tent or a hospitality area or a scoreboard that's been there all week long. So I kind of like the other side of this. Obviously, coming into the tournament, one of the bigger storylines, or let's not lie about it, the biggest storyline was Rory McIlroy. Had a pretty standard round. It was a little wild yesterday, but he kept it on the rails for him. He's got it to, I believe, one under now this morning. Is it for Rory just a case of making sure he's around heading into the weekend to give him a chance, or do you think he needs to make a bit of noise this morning?
No, I think that even par round was huge, and he knew it, and you could see it with his emotions. He made about a 10-footer on 18 just for par, and it's not often that you see a world-class player of that caliber sort of fist-pumping a par on 18 on Thursday afternoon, and I think he knows exactly what he needs to do, and it's taken him a while to get here, that you don't have to do anything special, that you can certainly, you know, have a bad opening round and pretty much do away with your chances. But if you just keep it around even par, particularly at this championship with the conditions that we talked about, I mean, if you just make incremental gains every day and he continues at this trajectory, I would actually be surprised if he's not in and about the lead come Sunday afternoon.
Have you seen Christo Lamprecht swing in person? Because I'm seeing these videos of it, and it looks violent and long. Have you seen his person? Have you seen him swing in person?
It is violent and long. It's kind of jarring. I think my colleague Ryan Lavner said it best on our podcast last night. He swings like an accordion.
That's good.
What's amazing to me, and Brandon Chamblee on the Live from Golf Channel did a great breakdown of his swing. And you wouldn't teach that, but then again, you're probably not going to teach too many 6'8" people how to swing the golf club. And
I might teach them how to shoot a jump shot, he said.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch. I don't pretend to be a swing expert, but I can look at that and be like, oh, that's hard to repeat, man. Like, there's a lot of moving parts. It was fun to watch yesterday. I'm really curious to see how he handles the conditions today.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the case with any amateur. Obviously, conditions at this major come into play often more so than just about any other. But anytime you're an amateur and you find yourself in this position, you know, it's always interesting to see because, you know, as much as we think, likely he's going to fade away, we've seen a lot of guys kind of been able to keep themselves in this position for a couple of days. And just looking at the way scores are today, if he's able to go out there and shoot something around even par, he's going to be in the mix. One other guy I wanted to ask you about is Wyndham Clark. I'll put my hand up, floored to see him have the round he did. You know, obviously we know what he did at the U.S. Open. We know how impressive it was. But this is a very, very different test than everything that was going on in L.A. Are you at all surprised to see Wyndham Clark get off to the start he did with yesterday's 3-under?
They make us do this thing on golfchannel.com where you pick your favorite and then you pick the person that's going to come
Sounds
close.
Sounds like you love it, Rex.
And one of it, well, yeah, because I'm trying to predict here and it never turns out well and it never ages well because this is a primary example. One of them is biggest disappointment. And if you look at Wyndham's record in this particular championship, it is awful. And it's because probably he just doesn't have much experience coming over here and playing this style of golf. It takes a minute to learn how to do this. And I had to take that one poorly. Again, another one of these that aged poorly, which I'm used to at this point.
Yeah, it's impossible to pick these things. Like, I mean, did you have Brian Harman leading the Open on Friday? Like, it's so hard to pick this stuff. So did you happen to hear what John Rahm said post-round yesterday about Rory and about the pace and about him, you know, not getting basically no one was paying attention to him and the amount of people that he had to follow. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah. It's interesting. It's not the first time he has complained about camera folks and people inside the ropes, and it can get hectic. Certainly when you're with Rory, and as you pointed out, Rory is the story this week. I'm sure that it did bug him and he's trying to win a championship here. And I'm sure I got to factor in his finish, too. He didn't finish very well, so John has a tendency to run a little hot on the golf course. We know that. All that being said, I don't think anybody on the golf course is trying to do anything to hurt John's round. I mean, I think that's the part that gets lost in the sometimes in the confusion. There's a lot of people inside the ropes. Things are going to happen, but I can see why he's aggravated.
Yeah, I mean, he gets aggravated at the best of times. So you can see why, especially the way his round went yesterday. But I maintain that's always been one of the harder parts of being a guy. And I understand what Rahm is saying, that he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt Rory does, because the people are watching Rory, they're not watching him. But, you know, we're going to have Rocco Mediate on the show a little later on today. And who would know better than him the idea of what it's like playing in that hurricane of Tiger Woods? And that's what it means to be an elite golfer. And it's just part of the challenges. And, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but when I hear these comments, and it's not just from Rahm, it's from anybody else, you know, I think back to kind of Bryson at the peak of his powers. That was maybe the hardest thing for him, not the golf, was dealing with all the noise surrounding him. Don't you think that is just part of being not just a star player, but a truly elite or transcendent one in the game?
I was at the 2008 U.S. Open, so ask Rocco firsthand what that Monday was like. I mean, and look, when it came to Tiger Woods in his prime, and I've done this story a couple of times now, and maybe he did it on purpose, maybe he didn't, but Tiger did some things where he would want to putt out first, because he knew as soon as he putts out that the crowd was going to start moving to the next hole. And if it gave him a little bit of an advantage, then so be it. I mean, Tiger Woods had to deal with it every single round, so I don't know why he wouldn't take advantage of it whenever he can. Compared to that, whatever it is John or anyone else deals with right now, it's very, very small by comparison.
Yeah, it certainly is, man. Just the Tiger breaks, they were plentiful. I'm just picturing now, I don't know why this is popping into my head, but everybody moving the boulder for him in Arizona. I don't know how many guys get the benefit of the doubt from that in the gallery. That. Yeah, it really was good. The one last one I wanted to ask you about is nobody near the top of the leaderboard. It's a guy who is trundling down there even more this morning. Justin Thomas, 11 over yesterday, 1 over today, now 12 over for the tournament. This is a guy who felt like a lock to be a Ryder Cupper coming into the year. Is that still the case? He has really been scuffling with his game. I know part of it is personalities, and he certainly feels like he's part of that team. But do you think his spot for that tournament is in peril at all, Rex?
I think it's amazing. That conversation is just buzzing around the media center, which is weird at the Open Championship that we're talking about. A specific player may or may not be going to Rome this year. It is interesting. I wish I use words more than I use pictures sometimes, but I could not have written what it looked like watching JT walk off the golf course yesterday. I mean, I've seen some sad players, and I've seen some players who were dealing with some things, but this one's hitting him hard. And I think it has a lot to do. And again, I'll go back to my colleague, Ryan Labder, who covered him in college, covered him in junior golf. This is someone that's never dealt with adversity before. And I'm not saying that JT's not going to figure it out. I think he's very talented, and I think eventually he does. But you can see in his eyes and his body language and the way he carries himself, this is tough. And it's going to take a lot to sort of battle your way out of it. The good news for JT, if he needs a paradigm of hope, he lives right next to him in Jupiter. Look at what Ricky Fowler went through and how he was able to fight his way out of it. But, man, that was hard watching him come off that course. And, no, I don't think right now he's going to be able to make that team.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, but it's probably not wrong at all. And yes, I'm sorry for asking you about that, but I'd be lying if I wasn't thinking about it. Rex, we love getting you on. Thanks so
buddy.
Much. Love to have a man on the ground. So thanks for playing the part for us this morning.
You guys enjoy the Open. See ya.
There we go. There he is, Rex Hoggard. That insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I was going to say...
Sandman wasn't quick enough on the sticks in there. Probably playing some games or something. What's he doing back there?
He's on a wrestling form. It's like, leave Seth Rollins alone! Is that a guy?
I think so.
Is that a guy? He's just half asleep. Okay.
Guess what?
Yeah.
Join the club, pal.
And McKee will not have it.
No,
only one guy can be asleep on the wheel here.
I will have it. I am here for it, 100%.
Okay, not me. I am a slave driver. How dare you, Sandman?
So, Shane Ryan.
Yes.
Who we were supposed to have on yesterday, which, you know.
Authorities got him. I choose to think
he's still tweeting. So he's alive.
No, I choose to think one of those guys. I know it's totally different part of the country. But the one of those guys from Buckingham Palace with like the big hats,
yeah,
just walked over there and he actually put him in the hat. So that's why they're so big, so they can act as a temporary jail cell for Shane Ryan.
I'm sure Hovland is going to take a lot of heat,
yeah,
for his outfit today.
Yeah,
it is hot fire.
So
it is so good.
I think that it looks great on him. I've amended this. I told you in the break I did not like it.
I'd rock that whole outfit. I'd pull it off.
I don't think you'd pull it off. I believe you'd rock it. You got to be a strapping hunk. Like I was playing with.
And what am I?
You're Gumby.
Oh, come on.
Come on, buddy.
No. Don't.
I'm Gumby with a pot belly, so don't take this. Don't think there's a shot.
Don't put you on me. I'm strapping.
You're not.
Yeah, I'm strapping.
No, I played with a buddy of mine yesterday.
People always tell me how broad my shoulders are, how strapping I am.
Yeah, but you're not. Like, you're not a thick boy. You got to have a little heft to you to pull that off. And I don't mean, like, you just need to be more solid. And, buddy, I hate, like, do we need to pull up the picture you posted on Twitter and Instagram this year and everyone started getting after you for your stick legs?
I don't remember that.
When you put up the picture?
No idea.
Oh, okay.
Don't remember.
Okay. Because you do remember.
But Shane Ryan sent out a tweet earlier today about, he said, I hate to say this, but if you were writing a script for how the U.S. absolutely limps into the Ryder Cup while the Euros peak, we're not far off. Everything has to go right to win on the road, and this is not everything going right.
No.
The fact that JT is losing his mojo alone is quietly devastating. So there you go.
Yeah.
He's right. Scheffler scuffling with the putter. JT, who was one of their aces, lost in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
This is setting up.
Here,
and look at the top of the leaderboard. There's Tom
Brian Fleetwood. Harman.
Yeah, I know, but he's not going to be there.
Yeah.
Win a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he won't be there.
No.
But I guess there's not a lot of Euros on the top of the leaderboard either, so.
No, that's the thing. You're like, President's Cup.
Yeah.
The amateur President's Cup.
Yeah.
Emiliano Grillo.
That's actually a lot of President's Cup guys there.
Yeah. Rosner is French. I'm not going to pretend to know what's going on there.
Rory pours it apart.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
There's their man.
There he is.
Rory and Rombo.
That's it.
A lot else there. Quickly, the auto qualifiers right now for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Scheffler, Clark, Koepka, Schauffele, Cantlay, Homa. Those are the auto qualifiers there. So Keegan Bradley, Jordan Spieth, Morikawa, Cam Young, Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, and then you get to Justin Thomas on the points list.
So, wow.
It's been quite the fall from grace for him. And again, I maintain that whoever it was who sent out the picture of JT's Ryder Cup fit this year, and it was him doing play-by-play at the match, that's very good. But it's good.
Here's an interesting question on the text line. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it piqued my interest.
Sure.
Brian from Toronto. Kiermaier. Jays don't often extend players in season, but he's a pending free agent. Healthy. Given his age, do you offer him a deal now? 3 years, $36 million range. I don't know about baseball contracts and mid-tier guys. Like, I just know that the top guys get paid a kajillion dollars, and I don't really know what other contracts look like. But I would like to have Kevin Kiermaier here for longer than the rest of this year. Maybe not 3 years.
Yeah.
But if he'd take two after this one, I would happily do it. I think he's going to probably deal with some injuries.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably not going to be playing 162 for you, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I love his contributions. I love his. I mean, this is the most predictable thing ever. Me as a Toronto sports fan loves Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah.
Oh, like the hustle hunky dude. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, shocker that we like him. But like, he's a heart guy. He is, you know, pure hustle. Makes great reads.
Yep.
Other than him throwing to third base yesterday to let both runners advance,
which was always perfect.
Well, that was a very rare brain fart from him, because he thought he could get him at third. He was feeling like heroic, and he thought he could get him at third, and he didn't. But
out there for your arm.
He's got a good arm.
It's good.
Yeah, you're down on Kevin Kiermaier, right?
He's gonna be 34 starting next year.
Oh,
you want to give him you want to give him a 1 or 2 year deal, I suppose. But you also have to think, and I know there's no cap, and they shouldn't think about it this way. What they do. That a three-year deal takes you into a three-year deal that kicks in next year, takes you past Bo Bichette, where you have to pay him more, you have to play Vaddy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you can't do those things. It's just, do you want to prioritize a guy who would then be 37?
You need baseball players on your baseball team.
Into when they're 37 years old?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he's not 38 now.
Guys fall off a cliff so quickly in all games, but this one as well. I think that is playing
with fire. I'm
comfortable
with 2 years.
Okay.
After this one.
You could give him 2 years. I'm not getting worked up about it. Obviously, I'd love to just like go year to year or something, but if he proves himself, there's going to be somebody who's not going to do that with him. So you got to pay a little more. Three to me feels like just a classic. They're dying to get that money off their books, or we talk about it as this hanging thing over their head for the last year of that. It just feels that's the way that would go for me if you're going to be looking at 37 in the last year of that deal, especially somebody who's predicated on their athleticism.
Yep. And I think he's a good bit player. I think
that's the other part of it is that as he ages, this is not going to be somebody who you can't take out of the lineup or is going to playing center field every day.
How many games has he played this year? Like, I feel like he's been kind of a part-time guy this year.
Yeah, part of that was that bug going around. Part of that was injuries. And then, you know, part of that is, yeah, got to get Cavan more AB. He's going to find a way to sneak him in.
He has played in 80 games so far this year.
Okay.
And how many games have the Jays played this year?
More than that.
Yeah. So he's been kind of a part-time player. You're right. He was hurt for a little bit. He had that bug that was going around. So, yeah.
Okay. Anything else on that?
The word hunk gets used so much lately, and I'm for it. Love the show, hunks. Ha, 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 ha. Tiff and Kitchener.
Could have done without the laughing emojis.
I think that's just that she's so happy because we're such big strapping hunks.
No, I think that's like one guy literally just described himself as Gumby with a pot belly. So I don't think that guy gets to be a hunk at the very least. That's me, just so we're clear there.
Gumby with a pot belly.
You like that?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't like it. No,
no, it's true. I don't have to like it though. All right. You good on that?
Yeah, sure.
All right. It's now time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, 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 yum. In stereo there. Yeah. Come on. People have been.
Yum, yum, yum.
Thank you. People have been put through enough here. They got to listen to McKee grouse and me talk about my pot belly for the entirety of the morning show so far. I put two topics here. Would you
Messi
like?
Messi debut.
Okay. Big deal. Yay or nay.
Oh my God, massive deal.
Yeah, okay.
This is potentially the greatest soccer player of all time playing his debut in America. Sure. It's huge.
It's great. Yeah, I know. Everybody talks about...
Nice zag.
Well, sick zag. Nice zag. How many times have we done this? Okay, I realize Thierry Henry was not Messi. I realize David Beckham was not Messi. Yeah. I know for sure Jermaine Defoe was not Messi. Guy's going to play. It's going to be a big deal to the people who care about it. It's going to raise MLS's stature in the world for sure.
Yep. But
it is big deals. It is a guy on a retirement tour for a team who I am... going to be very clear, not an expert on this, but from my understanding,
they're last place right now.
Absolutely stinks and is putrid.
Well, they're building. Yeah.
How old is he?
I don't know, 35.
Okay, like you might want to, you know, to the Kiermaier conversation, might want to get some stuff built.
Wow,
I personally do not care.
You don't care?
Well, I mean, I don't care about the success of what are they called, Miami FC?
Are they Real Miami? No,
Inter Miami.
Inter Miami FC is a lot of things.
That's too much soccer. Pick one.
So they play today.
Who do they play?
Cruz Azul, which is a League Cup game. So they're playing against a non-MLS game. So it's like...
Well, that seems...
It's interesting.
Okay. Tell me if I'm completely off base.
Probably.
Okay, fair. Good place to start. The MLS... spends a kajillion dollars or not. You can explain to me how this works. I imagine it wasn't super easy for them to convince him to come here. And the first game that he's going to play to, like, you know, boost the league and grow the game or whatever terminologies that I don't actually believe in that you want to use here, isn't even in MLS. Does that not make, should it not be against an MLS team?
I mean, you of all people, the number one high horse against Saudi money should be all over Messi. Because he turned down $1 billion from, literally, I think it was multiple billion dollars from the Saudis to come to the MLS. So you should be, there you go. That's what he deserves. You know, you're like,
yeah, if you should have led the witness better. You should have told me that.
I just did.
I know. And I applauded him. I literally did. So then it doesn't change how big a deal it is.
It's such a big deal. And I get it for, you know, people who, you know, they don't like the international sports. They can have a nice zag. It doesn't matter. But the fact that Lionel Messi is playing his first game in North America is a massive deal.
Okay. And if you don't have the answer to this, that's totally fine, because Lord knows I don't. Mm-hmm. The MLS is roughly the what biggest league in the world?
Like, I don't know.
Okay.
No idea. Probably the 10th.
Okay. Guys playing a game in the 10th biggest league in the world.
Yeah, but How it's great. The biggest media market, right? Like, it's the biggest thing. Like, it's a change. It's... If I can't, I'm not going to sit here. You're just going to sit there with your zag face on and be like, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to try to convince you.
I am not saying it doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm saying if it matters so much, maybe he should have made his debut for, I don't know, an MLS game. Is that insane to ask?
Well, they have games on their schedule, and this is the game that he's fit to play. He's ready to rock, and there he goes.
Yeah, you're right. A guy's never been held out. And for this last place team, you have to get him in there. Yeah, he wants to play against Cruz Azul because he's like, good. It's not this dirty MLS I'm playing in. It's this whatever, Lord knows what league's going on over there.
Cruz Azul is a Mexican team. Okay, somebody who's wondering.
That is the one I cannot for the life of me understand. I don't want to poo-poo this. It is a big deal for people who care about soccer. But if it's such a big deal for the league, I don't know, maybe make your debut in said league.
And shout out to our Canadian women who tied Nigeria last night.
I saw some people maybe saying they don't deserve shout-outs, actually.
Our queen, Christine Sinclair, missed a penalty.
I know. She went full Alphonso Davies.
Yeah, that's tough.
Except she's supposed to take it.
But she tried to drag it sometimes now.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to have it because I'm not intelligent enough too, but I want, just like after Alphonso Davies, I want that conversation. It feels like we all, and again, not me, because I don't have it, but all of you kind of skirted that conversation.
Like, I didn't. It was ridiculous.
Okay. I feel like I wanted that from you in the moment, and you were too hurt to give it to me.
We weren't together in the moment.
Well, I was texting you. I was wanting it from you. You weren't giving it to me.
No, because you don't care about soccer.
I care about Canada. You're a classic bandwagoner that jumped on. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, you don't care. That's the thing. And well, I'm like, I'm not going to text back to people who don't care.
Well, I wanted to text.
I've heard you yell at me about how much soccer sucks our whole friendship, so I'm not going to give you that in that biggest moment of my soccer fandom.
I'm trying to join the club. I know. Rory hitting the stick here.
All right, let's go.
Okay. I was having fun. We were talking about Messi.
But we got to go.
Okay. Morosi could wait 2 minutes. It's okay. John Morosi.
Three.
Guess what? If he would have heard this, he'd be giving me Messi takes. He would. He might when we come back through osmosis.
I'm asking for Messi and Detroit Red Wings takes.
Okay. I want one of those. One of those I don't. Hello, Mo Sider. John Morosi coming up next. Fan Morning Show, Gunning and McKee.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Halfway through Fan Morning Show here, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me, the two of us alongside you, and now joined by another friend, John Morosi, joining us now. John, how you doing? Getting used to talking to you weekly and love catching up with you. Thanks so much for jumping on this morning. Or the static in your phone line jumping on with us. Don't let McKee make the call because he would just talk to the static line. He'd say, give him 3 minutes. I think they might have something to say here.
Hold it.
You want to yell at me about Leo Messi more, or you're good on that?
No.
Okay, Blue Jays, back to that.
Yeah, we'll
we're going to endeavor to connect with John.
We'll wait.
Okay, we're not just going to sit here. This isn't like when your teacher leaves and it's like, okay, just sit still until I come back.
I was looking at the group that Canada was in for the Women's World Cup.
Okay.
And I think two of the teams won. So they're now in third.
I believe they just got a win.
They got a win now.
No room for error.
And they play the Irish.
The girls in green?
The next. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, I put it on our little doc there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I know. That's okay. We have John Morosi back, so we don't need to.
It'd be nice for them to win one of those games.
Yeah, would agree. They could have won last night even. Wouldn't have been perturbed by that. Would not be perturbed by John Morosi joining us now. John, thanks so much for jumping on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I also stayed up late to watch the end of that game, by the way.
Don't mistake us talking about it with having seen it. There's two guys who got up very early this morning.
It's too late.
We're opining loosely. If you would like to give us not actually, because I know you would. I know you would. We're just mentioning it, and we would have liked it to have gone a different way. But other than that, we do not have a ton. You apparently do. You always have a ton for us on baseball. I do want to get your opinion on the Jays, but want to start with the topic that we're going to talk about until it doesn't become one anymore. Where are we at? The latest twists and turns in Shohei land.
Oh, yeah.
Last we spoke to you, it seemed like they were trending towards not trading him. Now it seems like it's a possibility. I thought I saw a report of, but not to the Dodgers. Where are we at with all this, John?
Well, it is the topic in baseball and will remain as such, to your point, until we arrive to August 1st and then probably beyond that, no matter what happens, honestly. He's going to be a huge topic for months and years to come, as he should be. But what I believe right now is that the Angels are still listening. They're still open-minded to the inquiries that are coming in. They're not ready to trade him yet. And they've got a record right now that is one game above 500. They are within a reasonable distance of a wild card spot. And I suppose one's definition of reasonable is going to be crucial here. And certainly the person whose assessment matters most is going to be that of Artie Moreno, the Angels owner, because he ultimately is going to make the call. There'll be recommendations made by the front office. I believe they'll continue to workshop ideas as requests come in, and then they'll have to make an assessment in the final days of the month or on August 1st itself. Where are we? What are we going to do? Are we in it or are we not? The Yankees are struggling. The Mariners just lost Jared Kelnick. Their series coming up against the Jays will be very important because that's a head-to-head matchup against a fellow wild card contender. So I believe that they are, as a front office, just working on both possibilities. Do they have some scenarios where they add? Do they have some scenarios where they trade the most marketable and popular superstar in the baseball world? I think both of those things are possible, and it's going to matter a lot how they play against the Jays coming up next weekend. It'll matter a lot how they play against the Pirates and Tigers in the meantime. They have got some very, very important games coming up, and the reality is if they win the next two series against Pittsburgh and Detroit, it very easily could come down to how they play against Toronto. It seems that may seem extreme to say that a decision of this magnitude will come down to how they play over one weekend at Rogers Center, but the Angels are taking every last bit of information in that they can before making a choice that could define the franchise one way or the other for years to come.
So, John, you mentioned how it could come down to these last few series, which I completely agree with, but the magnitude and scale of this trade, like, would they have already talked to teams to be like, hey, this is what you're willing to give up so that, like, at the snap of a finger, they can come up with a trade if they're out of it at that point? Like, it just seems like such a massive thing to figure out for such a huge player with, like, a couple days to spare. Like, what would the timeline be like on a trade like this?
No, it's a really important question, Sam. And I think that the plan right now and what the Angels are doing is they are exactly doing that. They are taking phone calls in, taking information in, working very diligently to know the top prospects in the other organizations. And here's where I think there may come a time where the decision is straightforward or more straightforward than we might think, because the names of the prospects who would get this deal done are not necessarily obscure. In other words, as much as Perry Minasian, the GM of the Angels, and of course former Blue Jays executive, you know, Perry is a very diligent worker. He knows prospects around the industry exceptionally well. He and Alex Anthopoulos are very similar in that regard in how they work. But the universe of prospects who will get this deal done is relatively small and well-known. And by that, I mean you're going to have to get multiple prospects that are in the top 100 of the industry to make this worth your while if you're the Los Angeles Angels. Because you're not just giving up the extraordinary talent of Shohei for the second half of the season. You're giving up all the revenues that come attached to him. You're giving up the possibility of him hitting 60 home runs or more in your uniform. That's a lot to give up. And so there are reasons to keep him that go beyond just trying to make the playoffs this year. And I think that the teams that are interested in Shohei, and obviously that's the entire sport, will need to not just say to Perry, hey, I know that you're a great scout. We've got a guy at high A who's had a really good emerging year. Okay, that player might be the third or fourth or fifth piece in the deal. But the first few had better be names that the industry knows, or else it's just not going to be really worth the Angels' while to go down this road.
Yeah, Coke, not RC Cola situation for whatever the Angels end up getting. Should they go through and make that trade? You know, switching gears to, well, this couldn't be a question about anyone, but it's more a question about the Blue Jays. One of the things that people have kind of turned their attention to with this team is the idea of a power bat. I mean, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alejandro Kirk both hit one out of the park yesterday, and wow, look at that. They actually scored some runs. Now, obviously, you can manufacture it, but this team has really missed the pop in the middle of the lineup. For teams who are looking for that power bat, who are some of the more available names, and just how attainable are they?
Right. No, it's a good question. Interestingly, one team that I'm watching carefully right now is Seattle and what direction they take things. They just lost Jared Kelenic to a fracture in his leg because he kicked a Gatorade cooler in the dugout, which is not a great way to lose one of your best players. And so we have to watch what Seattle does. Do they basically say, okay, when one of your best players kicks a Gatorade can and breaks his foot, maybe it's just not your year? Or do they go to the extreme other case and say, oh, we've got to make a run at this thing and make a bunch of moves? If they are sort of a buy and sell type of an operation, there's a player there in Seattle whose name is Teoscar Hernandez, who you may have heard of before. That's the kind of player I think that obviously the Jays know him. I think that he could in some situations be available. We heard Ross Atkins talk about maybe preferring to have a righty bat, which is a little surprising based on their needs in recent years, but I can see why he would say that. But Teoscar, as everybody knows, is a pending free agent and has a good track record of hitting the ball pretty well at Rogers Center. So I would say that he is the homecoming story for Teoscar, which would be kind of an interesting one, I think is one of the possibilities out there. I think the Chicago White Sox have some guys they could move. I don't think the big-time guys are going to be moving necessarily, but one name that comes back to me, and it's not so much a power bat, it's more of a contact move the line bat, is Tim Anderson. If you could have him play second base, he don't look at his full season numbers; they're not very good. It's all about how he's playing right now, and he had a tremendous series just now in New York against the Mets, and maybe he's starting to get things turned around. You know, he could play some second base. Obviously, the Jays do not need him at shortstop, but he played second for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. So the supply of bats, you know, Cody Bellinger, his name comes to mind. Obviously, he's another lefty that maybe is not from a left-right standpoint what they need, but I think from a power standpoint, he is. So I do think Bellinger is one name to watch carefully just because he is one of the best rental bats out there. Left, right, it almost doesn't matter. I think he could be a DH, he could play center field, he could do a lot of things for you. So I think Cody Bellinger is one more name to watch.
Tim Anderson's an interesting one here, John, because I pull up his contract situation, and he has one more year of control after this one, which, you know, we know what this front office is
they
a big fan of that.
They love it.
Do you think that's, like, it's funny how it always sneaks up on me in baseball when it's guys like an absolute superstar, like can't miss guy. And then, you know, at the deadline, a team's struggling and they're thinking about, is that a guy they'd actually consider moving?
Tim Anderson?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%. The White Sox, I think Luis Robert is off limits. I think to an extent Eloy Jimenez is as well, although there are probably some situations in which he would be moved. But I think everybody else among the position players is available. I really believe that. You know, maybe not Andrew Vaughn, but the Jays don't need Andrew Vaughn. Pitching-wise, I think Dylan Cease, I could go one way or the other on how available he is, but Lance Lynn, definitely available. Lucas Giolito, definitely available. Bullpen pieces there, certainly available. So the White Sox are a good team to talk with right now. I think they've got some good supply of players there that I think could fill a lot of teams' needs. And again, Anderson's full season numbers are not good. They are not. But I was watching him play yesterday on television, his game against the Mets, and it's the inside-out swing is back, and he had a lot of line drives. This is the ultimate small sample size time of year. Your full season numbers are good. If, you know, they're valuable context, but you got to see how you're playing right now. And that was a very good series for Tim Anderson there in New York.
Yeah, the White Sox are just such a crystal clear example of how quickly the worm can kind of turn in baseball, right? I mean, I think back to that Field of Dreams game against the Yankees. What was that, two years ago? And it was just Kopech even coming out of the pen, and Hendricks and Crochet and all the guys they had there. And obviously a lot of injuries. We know everything that happened with Hendricks. But, yeah, it is just it's a kind of picture-perfect example of how quickly you can go from, I mean, World Series contender, quite honestly, to a team that's looking at selling off pieces. That leads us to the Blue Jays. I'm not predicting their downfall anytime soon. Not at all. But you got a team that is in a position now. How aggressive should they be? I know they will do something. But yesterday, a guy you know well, Jeff Blair, was on the station. He was very careful in choosing his words, but basically hinting that the Blue Jays might take a bigger swing than people are expecting here. How busy do you expect them to be, and how busy should they be?
Well, they should be busy because this is their window. Mm-hmm. And my first thing of advice and counsel to everybody is to take a look at the two teams that have their names at the bottom of the American League East right now. That would be Boston and New York. And typically when Boston and New York are at the bottom, that's the Jays' chance. That's their window. So the standings with respect to Boston and New York tell us that this is the Jays' chance. And their roster with Vlad and Bo tell us this is their chance. They don't necessarily have as many of the brand name top 100 prospects. They do have some better pitching that's emerged, I think, at sort of at Double A and below. Davis Schneider's an interesting prospect to see where he fits in. So there are some players they can move. And in general, I look at this team and say, this is your opportunity. Look at how good, for example, Baltimore is. Baltimore is only going to get better in the next few years. They're a scary team now. They might be even scarier next year. So my advice on the Jays is this is your opportunity to really seize the moment and make a push here. I do think that yes, get a power bat. Yes, get a reliever. I don't know that they need a starter, depending on how they feel about Hyunjin Ryu's chances to contribute. Manoah as well. Maybe they get a swingman type. I'm a big fan of Michael Lorenzen right now with the Tigers. He could be a starter. He could be a reliever for you. I think the Jays they're poised to make a reasonably big move just because of where they're at competitively. And if you talk with the right team who would take on or who would be willing to maybe take a younger prospect at Double A and lower, from a pitching perspective, obviously Tiedemann's had injuries this year, which hurts from that perspective. But the Jays have, I think, the financial willingness to do this, and they're willing to add payroll when appropriate. And I think their need for one more bat is apparent, and then their need for one more reliever is apparent. But the good news is they don't have to make a play for a top-end starting pitcher. They've already got those guys, which is a blessing to go through at this time of the year, to know that you already have a couple aces in place in Berrios and in Gossman at the very least, and that we know how solid Bassett has been for most of the year as well. So they've got a pretty good starting group. You think maybe depth starting, relief pitching, one more bat, but I think that the core of this team is fairly well established, and the most important thing is you see the Rays, they're struggling a bit right now. So then you start to look at Baltimore as the one team that you're probably afraid of in your division. The Central, you're not really afraid of anybody. Out West, Texas is pretty good. But this is your opportunity, though. This is when Boston and New York struggle, you still have to time up your window to when they're down, and they're down right now. And that tells me it's go time for the Jays in their front office.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a busy couple of weeks here. Deadline less than 2 weeks away. 10 days, or yeah, I think 10 days from now. John, thanks so much. Enjoy Cooperstown, and thanks for jumping on with us.
Thanks, buddy.
Yes, and by the way, let's reflect on this for a moment. We got Cooperstown this weekend. The only franchise that can claim both Scott Rolen and Fred McGriff,
your
Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh,
so
yeah,
big time weekend for Jays history. It's going to be a lot of fun. Both Scott and Fred, I expect great speeches and a very, very emotional weekend here in Cooperstown.
Love it, buddy. Enjoy.
The crime dog. As good a nickname as we'll ever get. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate that.
Thanks.
From John.
Thanks, guys.
Morosi.
Thank you.
There he goes.
don't want to do it on his Hall of Fame weekend.
Oh.
Scott Rolen is.
I know. I know. Baseball. Baseball usually doesn't do this.
Don't get me wrong.
For sure.
Really good.
Is it the Hall of Really Good?
And Scott the Rock at third base in Toronto.
Man, awesome.
Made me feel things about defense that I had never felt before.
They had a great run of third base. Like Gloss was like,
oh yeah,
you know. But Donaldson, obviously,
I just don't.
Chappie. It's a hot position.
It is
in franchise history.
Like career OPS of .855.
Yeah, it's glove.
How many home runs do you think he hit?
It's not some ungodly number, but is it 279?
Okay, not terrible. 316, Austin.
Okay. Austin, oh wow, that's pretty good. I wanted to get to 300, but I thought no.
Of all the
it's
baseball
glove.
Usually nails it.
They really do, to the point where when they don't nail it, it's always on the other side of things. Like it's Bonds, it's Clemens, it's all that stuff.
Yeah, but like you're telling me.
No, I'm not. They are.
Barry Bonds.
They're saying it.
You're telling me.
Get a guy from the Hall of Fame committee on the phone.
Jeff Blair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we already did that. I feel like he'd agree, probably.
I don't know if I didn't see his vote.
I didn't either.
So I don't want to disparage him if he thinks he's a Hall of Famer.
Blair doesn't seem like a big tweet out his ballot guy. Not that he'd be ashamed of it, but I just feel like he could not be bothered with the exercise is how I feel about that.
Like I saw, you know, I'm looking at when he started baseball. Scott Rolen started in 1996. I've probably been a big baseball fan since like 98, 2000. Like I saw a lot.
I was there, man.
No, I saw guys getting into the Hall of Fame now. I've seen a lot of their career. And like I never was like, Scott Rolen is Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm surprised by that one. When it came out, that was one that I was legitimately floored by.
I'm right there with you. It is a guy who always felt like a really good player, but I think it's so tough in baseball. And again, like he was not a wet noodle, far from it offensively, but I just think in baseball, and it shouldn't be that way. It's half the game like it is in everything else, but it's really hard when you're there because of your glove.
And okay, so I have something.
Shout out to Matt Chapman. Kind of that dude.
Yeah, he's kind of that dude. I mean, Scott Rolen, definitely a better hitter than Matt
Chapman. For sure. And that's my point.
Like, so, a couple things from that Morosi interview.
You just want to take your lap from yesterday, or?
My ears perked at the thought of Tim Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
But I
do
guess
the
I was
Simeon thinking, thing all over again?
I guess I was thinking of, like, 2 years ago, Tim Anderson.
Yeah. No, but John said,
even 2 years ago.
But don't look at this year, he said. Just trust him. He saw it.
Last year, he hit over 300 in 79 games. The year before that, he hit over 300 in 123. In 2019, he hit 335 in 123 games.
That was when the White Sox were at the absolute peak of their powers. That whole team was loaded.
He had 109 strikeouts in 498 at-bats. This is the exact type of addition that would change the Blue Jays for me. Like a guy, like a legitimate guy at a position of need. Mm-hmm. So you're not playing Cavan Biggio. I know you.
What's your new left fielder?
Yep. I know.
Like, I'm not rehashing. No. Just doing the math.
Unfortunately, yes. You're giving up a little bit on defense with Varsho, but.
Two-hit Witt.
Sorry, Varsho. You can't make contact. And all Witt does is hit. He's a hitter. You put him in the line. This is actually eerily.
He would win at Royal Liverpool because he's a hitter.
This is eerily similar to the Whit Merrifield trade. Like a guy that has had a ton of success.
Yeah, Anderson probably more pedigree, I would think.
Yeah, but like, I mean, Whit was a
what he is. I just think Anderson kind of more premier position as opposed to second base, all that stuff. But yeah, to your point, very similar.
Very similar. That's a guy that you could immediately put into your two hole. You could put him into your three hole. You could do whatever the heck you want with him. And I love that idea. You have an extra year of control. I don't think it would take all your finest meats and cheeses. Shout out Mike Wilner to get him. I really do love that idea. I don't know if it'll happen, but shout out John Morosi for getting me a little bit horned up about Tim Anderson today.
Well, and just the way it feels is it gets you back to the feel, and I know it's a little bit of just plopping an all-star shortstop at second base, and that's what I'm doing, but it makes you feel like the team felt when Semien was there. And yeah. I don't expect him to have the year Semien had. There's a reason he got the bag he did afterwards, but...
And you don't think Tim Anderson would be like, okay, I'll play second?
Yeah, of course he would.
Like, I'll get to leave Chicago where we absolutely rot, no future, to go to the Jays who are hot right now in a division... In a division race.
Yeah, very much so.
In a wild card race. That win yesterday got the Jays 3 games clear of the final wild card spot.
Yeah, that's big.
Like three, like obviously it's still July here. So like I'm not getting way too ahead of
myself.
Oh,
now it's in the middle of summer when it's the baseball season. But when it's summer, you're sad because it's almost over.
Well, the weather's changing. Okay.
I'm trying to keep track of what's going on.
We should probably break.
Probably should. It's just us.
I'll read this from Adam and Guelph. Fall is here has to be the hottest take I've ever heard on this program.
Thank you.
It's 30 degrees and mid-July.
Preach.
Amazing comment, Sammy. Cool your jets. The grind for this week is all about to pay off. I'm off work all next week and will be sitting at the dock at the cottage. Plus 2 rounds of cottage golf booked. Love me some fall golf at the cottage. Buddy, what a week.
Can I come, Adam and Guelph?
I don't know, Adam, how long your day is, but those hours are ticking off slow.
Slow.
Slow. But that feeling, when you get to the cottage, get those feet up, first crack of a cold one.
It has been so long for me since I feel like the last time I was at a cottage was, and this was not a necessarily relaxing cold one cottage, your bachelor party.
It was not the most relaxing cottage.
No, it was not.
A lot of dice.
A lot of hot dice by the pool. And a lot of hot Leafs talk coming up next from us. But how? They just named 2 assistants. Oh, we'll gin some takes out of this. I told you, I need to live in the take chamber at all times. I can't even miss one. Sam McKee and Brent Gunning. 1 hour left of the morning show. 2 hours left of us today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.